Welcome to the Entrepreneur's Logbook podcast, where we uncover the strategies and insights driving extraordinary business growth. I'm excited to introduce Ollie Roswell, founder of Calm and an expert in the cold email space. Over the past few years, Ollie's been focused on building products to help B2B teams to be more efficient with their outbound outreach, especially with their cold email outreach. Early this year, Ollie exited his first company, Response AI, a platform that allowed companies to send personalized videos within their cold emails, allowing for higher reply rate and higher booking rates. Ollie, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome here.
What's going on, man? It's good to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to just have a chat about the last couple of years, last couple of months as well, for sure.
Sounds good. Cool. So I figure probably where we should start off is a bit of like background, how you got into this space. I obviously follow you on Twitter. I've seen where you came from, what you've done in this space. But for anyone that might be a bit less familiar with, love to get an introduction there.
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah. So I suppose if it goes back as far as kind of like 2017, 2018, in the UK, obviously similar to the US, similar to Canada, whatever it may be, you sort of like finish college or finish school, like secondary school, and then you go into university. I sort of said, because my parents were quite like in a good way, like quite overbearing at the time, like when you're sort of trying to start like an online thing and it's quite like alien to that kind of generation. And they always think you're like, selling drugs online or something like that on the black market. But they sort of said, look, like if you get your degree, like then you can go off and do like whatever you want and not have to worry about, like if you really want to like, make no money and sort of like do these weird things online, then you can. So I finished my degree in sort of like 2021, sort of around that time, and I thought, right, I've been dabbling in like blog writing and like freelance stuff on Fiverr and things like that, and then I thought I wanted to go into sort of high ticket sales, so I actually found a role in sort of like selling like Google Ads packages and things like that, and like Facebook at the time and Instagram, things like that. And it was kind of before the influencer boom, where like people were sort of going wild. It was kind of just raw, like static ads. And I got into that, sort of sold a couple hundred K in that, and it was a decent like commission structure, because like the classic like high ticket sales, like 5-10%. So that sustained me for about a year before I saw that this sort of like cold email agency stuff was coming out of the woodwork. And I thought, well, I was getting a lot of clients for my high ticket sales role through cold email. So I thought, I wonder if I could do this for other companies and just them sort of pay me, like some kind of like retainer or something like that. It was obviously popular at the time. I know that you'll remember like the kind of discourse at that time was like performance-based offers. So you don't pay a thing until I get you meetings and that kind of thing. We could have a whole podcast on why that is maybe not the best idea, like purely performance-based. Simply down to the fact that, running a lot of Google domains and stuff, your margins start eating away and things like that. So I enjoyed that. We got it to about 25 clients, sort of like scaled past sort of 25 to sort of 30-ish, but they were more kind of like with performance-based offers, you can scale the client base really high. And then you're sort of like you become kind of like a freelancer doing the work for a lot of people. So kind of tried to do the 4-hour work week thing, get a few like VAs and stuff like that to do inbox management, that kind of stuff. It was kind of stressful. It was quite challenging, and obviously cold email is like a highly sort of coveted space and highly sort of like litigious space where they're constantly changing like the goalposts. It's quite political. There's Google and Outlook have like quite a monopoly over it. So I sort of thought throughout that I was getting decent results, and any time that I sort of like encouraged the client to send like a personalized video, we got sort of better reply rates. And I thought, well, that's great, but I really don't want them to sit down every day and like, record like 50 of these Zooms. And there were like dozens of, I'll mute that out. Sorry. There were dozens of, like kind of like hacky ways of doing it, like going around, you would like record one loom, which was generalized, and then you would like add a hey Steve or a hey John at
Yes,
the start. And it was very sort of choppy. And I thought, well, I wanted to add, wanted to create a sort of spin on a couple of like existing tools at the time where you have like a landing page and you can just sort of automate that. And that's when Response AI was born, and it was kind of like, okay, we're going into a like an exciting space, kind of like, it sounds cheesy, but sort of like cutting edge kind of thing. Like people were like using these crazy tools. And I started that SaaS, and ultimately we'll talk about the growth of that sort of soon, but it actually better than I deserve. Like it grew really, really quickly. We got a lot of people on board. People were enjoying it. We sort of spent a lot of time ironing out bugs and things like that. It was cool, man. It was cool to sort of build that. And I was sort of like, that was my kind of persona on at the time, Twitter, and obviously now X. But that was a good time, man. And from there now, we sold that, and then I'm now in the position where I get like a bit of breathing space. I'm like, what do I want to build? I know that at the time, people were coming to us for sort of like pseudo consulting calls where they were like, all right, we're going to use Response AI to do this and do that, but how do you get data? So on like a almost on like a consultative level, I was doing sort of like helping people with data. I thought, well, there's a lot of data sources. You've got Apollo, Listkit, you've got like ZoomInfo, you've got all these guys that you can really trust. They've got great data, but you are left to do that yourself. You're left to find the data yourself. And I thought, if I can make like a niche specific database, like how StoreLeads does it, like how there's like Crunchbase for like tech and stuff like that. Wanting to niche down. So that's where we're at now. So went from high ticket sales to cold email agency, performance-based setup fees, that kind of thing, to the SaaS because of my experience in cold email. And then obviously now we're sort of like sort of an exit later. We're just doing SaaS again, man. I think that's where I'm going to be. This is where I'm going to be for the next sort of 10, 15 years, is just sort of stacking SaaS into the portfolio,
Yeah, I mean, I know that's definitely what route we want to go, like SaaS. So we'll definitely talk about that later on. But I think one thing that I find is like really interesting is you've somewhat any endeavors or things that you've started, there's always a correlation between like the thing that you were on and the thing that you would start like next. Obviously, when you started doing the cold email, you somewhat saw that a lot of people would get like higher booking rate, reply rates out of sending like personalization. And you're like, okay, like why not create a software out of this? So that it's always like created out of like a need, out of like the current work that you're doing. And with like the response, like if I'm not mistaken, like the time that you created this, like AI was just starting to like become like more popular. And so you somewhat jumped onto that like really quickly and managed to really capitalize on it really heavily.
Yeah, definitely. It was a bizarre sort of excuse me, a bizarre sort of experience where I was not technical. This was before sort of like the AI agents where you can like code. You got things like Cursor and things like it's one I'm using recently is Lovable, which is like a cool sort of like coding tool. I strongly recommend anyone who has that feeling, by the way, a side comment. Like, oh, I don't know how to code. Like you can just build stuff these days by just asking it in like natural language, like ChatGPT, Claude, whatever it may be. That's how we sort of started responses through truly like natural language, like asking ChatGPT, like how do I build like a web server and that kind of thing. It started from such small sort of acorns to obviously these sort of really sort of large scale stuff where you've got a lot of people on board. So we definitely got on that sort of like hype train of AI, because you're in that sort of like that kind of like really small like circle of cold email people on sort of Twitter and that kind of thing, like money Twitter. Everyone was doing cold email, and I feel like if I could sort of slot myself into that and be like a have a software that people talk about and recommend to each other, even if it doesn't get 100,000 users, you're in this sort of like small nexus of people that are gonna sort of like use it and sort of vouch for it and sort of champion it. So that's kind of where we got is I realized that there was a train to jump on, but how do we get on it so that it's not a one trick pony, but rather something that like people like subscribe to and enjoy and get results with, and the results sort of came from there, man. So yeah, definitely you can jump on the hype train in two ways. You can jump on it to sort of like we're talking like say like launching a crypto because of some meme that's occurred. I think you got the Hawk Tour stuff and that kind of thing. That's like a quick win. And obviously you jump on a hype train to sort of cash out quite quickly. You make t-shirts or something like that. The other side is like noticing some kind of trend that AI outreach was becoming quite available and quite sort of like popular. People were vouching for that kind of thing online and on Twitter and in this sort of like small like echo chamber of money Twitter and cold email Twitter. I thought, well, we can sort of design something here that's going to get some, there's probably going to get some.
Action.
The wait list then was evident. I know we'll go into that kind of like
Yeah, and
strategy.
that's actually like one thing I wanted to like touch on, because I know you mentioned there was like a lot of traction, you gain like a lot of users like really quickly. When you start like obviously you start like a SaaS company, getting those first like paid 10 users, and from like my understanding, is usually like the hardest part as far as doing so. What was some of your approach to doing so? I imagine your personal network, people that you know on Twitter, but I assume there was maybe another strategy behind that.
For sure, man. I think one thing that really bugs me when I watch sort of similar like growth strategy, playbooks or videos or podcasts or interviews about like building a SaaS, I've noticed that there's just this strange like one liner that highlights the fact that they had like an extreme advantage at the start. So example is like, oh, so I just woke up and I just, I posted it to my audience of 100,000 subscribers and I started getting track. And I'm like, all right, okay, like interesting. Like I see how obviously you didn't just spawn in with that audience. You built it, you worked hard on it. But the point is that people are watching the video like, oh, how can I get my first 10 customers? It's very statistically less likely that you have that 100K followers, whatever. So I've got two sort of sections here. Is one, the version without an audience on how we got our first 10 customers, because that's how we got, say, the first response customers. And then version with an audience, which is how I'm growing Comb now, the database. I'm seeing that having an audience of people that know you and like have bought from you before, I see how it's literally like on easy mode, if you know what I mean, of like connecting with people. So the version without an audience is effectively, we ran sort of mass cold email at scale. You got the, I won't go into that. If people sort of know in this space, you've got classic, like buy like 30 domains, link them up to Google and Outlook, create say three inboxes per domain, whatever it may be, pop them into Instantly or Smartly, like the classic. Like I really have nothing else to say on that except the fact that a year ago it was way easier and it was a less litigious space and less political space where Outlook and Google were like changing things less. I started seeing that cold email was teetering off a bit when people started really getting banned and stuff. And then it's sort of come back in a good way because people are obviously mavericks in this space and they're just making up ways of like getting around things and sort of like workarounds, which is great. I know that at the time when I was running cold email, it was very, very easy to sort of get in front of people with your 90% open rates and that kind of thing. And now it's obviously requiring a lot more sort of deep infrastructure to get cold email to work these days. But that's a sort of side comment. Essentially, what we did, very, very easy way of getting leads immediately, is you create a cold email campaign with what I sort of coined at the time, which I know that I think Hormozi's talked about it and sort of like Dan Kennedy and like old kind of copywriters, is what's called a self-qualifying lead magnet. So everyone knows what a lead magnet is, but in essence, a self-qualifying lead magnet is this sort of prophecy that you build where if you've signed up to get this thing, you are likely a perfect customer for me based off of what the thing I gave away is. I know that sounds very wordy. The very, very cheap and like kind of silly example is if you give a lead magnet away to a cold audience, that is how to get over, how to get better sleep when you've just had a baby. Like the self-fulfilling and self-qualifying lead magnet, that suggests that anyone who buys that or gets that is going to be like a first-time mum or a dad. So you see how what we were doing is our
I see it.
self-qualifying lead magnet was for the wait list on Twitter, it was writing your cold email scripts for you because we had the sort of background in cold email, like, oh, hey, I got 100 clients for my clients, whatever it may be. I got 100 meetings with these scripts. Join the wait list and we'll give you these scripts and we'll write you these scripts based on your offer. By virtue, if you signed up to that, I knew you were doing outreach. So I knew that I've now got a small pot of people who are doing outreach because I did that kind of thing. With cold email, I didn't want to mass blast like 100,000 emails offering people script writing because it was going to take me like forever. So instead, we offered 1,000 leads in your ICP. So in your sort of ideal sort of market. Hi, Steve. Notice that you are running a marketing agency targeting roofers. Can we build you a list of 1,000 roofers, qualified emails and numbers? And in exchange, we'll just get on a quick call and I can show you some tool I've been building. So In essence, from the very beginning, you are going to want to create some kind of self-qualifying lead magnet, pass it out to a cold audience, and the people who bite, they are basically raising their hand and explaining to you that they are in that market, and it's very likely that they'll sort of, bite or at least have a look at or even a glance at what you are selling for the higher ticket thing or the software or the subscription. In essence, really, the one thing I'd watch out for that is believing that your lead magnet is a self-qualifying one and it like attracts the right audience when it actually doesn't really. I can't really think of an example off the top of my head, but it comes down to the minute details. So we were offering 1,000 leads on cold email as the lead magnet. If we had offered 20 million leads, like just a database of leads, it attracts the wrong people because you don't really care that much about outreach. You clearly just want the data because you might be like a person who's going to resell it or something like that. Offering 1,000, there's some sort of method in the madness of offering just 1,000 because you see that there are people who care about targeted outreach. And that's when video comes in and that matters. So that was the main one without an audience is mass cold email with the SQLM is whatever it's called, self-qualifying lead magnet. The other side is that you can grow truly from zero with what we did was Twitter giveaways at the time. Now, obviously, X giveaways. You would say, got this big ass list of ABC, or I've got this like script that we're running that's got us 20 meetings. This was all legit and it was backed by like screenshots of our Instantly or our Smart Lead accounts. We'd say, does anyone want this? If you do, like and retweet. And not only does that obviously create a kind of network effect of you getting more followers and then they're retweeting, so you're getting more followers. Everyone knows about these kinds of threads. But the other side is that obviously the people that you're being retweeted into, if they're sort of following you as well and it creates this flywheel,
It's a
that's
snowball
also
effect.
is exactly it's also a self-qualifying thing. You are not going to retweet that unless you are doing cold email. So it's as simple as that. I knew that everyone who responded to that, you're not going to get like a private equity firm CEO who never does cold email to like interact with that. There's no reason why they would want to see a script that got 20 meetings. It's only people who are running an offer online that are going to get that. So
It's like
that.
a running like Facebook ads, like a really like a broad audience where you're just trying to get as much people as you can, but you're qualifying them by having like a hook calling those people out specifically. And you're somewhat doing the same thing with like giveaways and stuff like that. No, that's I love that. And when you approach like cold email, because I mean it seems that it has worked like pretty well for you over like the past few years growing like the companies, et cetera. Is there like a secret sauce that you have as far as like writing like really good emails that converge, or it could really just be even the targeting? Because I know that's a pretty interesting component and
Yeah,
important.
for sure, man. I think, to be honest, I think people will like sort of like put their head in their hands here, like, oh, like what is he talking about? I personally never cared that much about targeting because we, at the time, we were trying to find whatever you would call product market fit. I think to this day, we probably found like 50 to 60, we got 50% of the way there where like people are talking about it, recommending it to people, affiliating. But you see how like true product market fit is like the sales forces of the world or the Slacks where everyone is just going nuts about it. I think an example I've seen recently of product market fit is probably something like Cursor, which is like every developer I know and every person doing coding has used Cursor or is paying for Cursor. It's just like an AI coding agent thing that you can sort of download and pay for. That has gone like parabolic, and I'm seeing that that's true product market fit. We sort of got 50% of the way there, so our targeting was very limited. We were just targeting everyone who was, for example, our target would be people technologically, so with BuiltWith or with Apollo, the technology filter, you could just find people who were using Gmail or Outlook. So I was like, oh, we couldn't filter at the time, and I feel like you still can't filter like who is using Instantly or Smartly, because I know there's thousands of users in that pool. We were just targeting people who were using like ZoomInfo, Apollo, Crunchbase, and had like Gmail accounts or had Outlook accounts, and you can filter by all of those on like Apollo or ZoomInfo, whatever it may be, Seamless AI. In general, what we saw is that when we targeted that kind of like persona, you would get people who came in and really love the offer because we did the qualifier lead magnet, which was just the 1,000 leads. We get a lot of people on the calls. That sort of role was quite difficult because they were sort of like quite old school outbound teams who were not using things like Instantly and Smart Leads. So they would say like, oh, we have 5 reps, doing 10 emails each a day. I'm like, wow, like this makes no sense for you. That was the kind of like catch 22 is we were sending thousands of emails, but a lot of people were like saying like, oh, what's Smart Lead? Like, what is having like 10 domains? Why would you buy 10 domains? And I was doing a lot more like free consulting on those calls as opposed to like
I
taking a
figured.
demo for my software. The true secret sauce was the one that got us the most parabolic growth was that you can scrape socials for followers. So you've got like Instagram followers, Twitter at the time, you've got like Facebook groups. You scrape those and you then scrape what I suppose you would call a self-qualifying like community or like audience of people. So in other words, if thousands of people are following a really big guy in the e-commerce agency space. So I know that there's a gentleman guy I think called Sufyan who does I hope I'm saying his name right, who does like TikTok like agency stuff. If you were to scrape all the people who follow him, there's going to be some people in there who are running their own e-commerce agency because he's a person who is an influencer in that specific space. An example is Cold Email Wizard. I don't know why you would be following Cold Email Wizard unless you're a bot, if you're not sort of in that kind of space. The same with Client Ascension, that kind of thing. What you can do is scrape those followers of those people and find their emails with like tools online, just like Twitter scrape or whatever it may be. And you can literally reference that as a first line. You can say, hey, I saw you're following Zach on Twitter. I have this tool. Do you want to try it out? So scraping people who are following large influencers, it was better than just scraping like marketing agencies off Apollo or Clutch or things like that, because I know that they're in that kind of like echo chamber of like Instantly, Smart Lead, like 100 domains, like that kind of thing. Those are our true sort of like our true kind of like army of people that were going to actually buy this product. And that was when we started scaling to like 15, 20 meetings a week because we were targeting those people just through cold email.
And
And then
like
the
I
follow
would be think like
up.
I would even be thinking that you could look at like Facebook groups of people like scaling to seven figures or like these types of like keywords that you know someone is like building an agency, they're already at this some like point and they want to get to like that next level. And we've obviously spoken on to like acquiring like clients, and one of the things that I thought was interesting is you have like a pretty strong stance around like against like LTD, like lifetime deals. And I think that goes back to obviously building a really good like client LTV. When you look at like SaaS, like building software, et cetera, because I know you're obviously against LTV, how do you go about really focusing on building like a good like client LTV? Like I know getting client feedback is going to be like a good one. I think you had mentioned on Twitter even giving out like gift cards to get like feedback and stuff like that. But I'm not sure if there's like a unique approach you take to client LTV.
Yeah, for sure, man. I think to sort of like to kind of address the lifetime value aspect as well, for like, sorry, lifetime deal aspect. In general, when you're running a SaaS, I think if you in this sort of generative AI kind of era where everyone's using like ChatGPT, like API just meaning that you're paying for like, another service. So for example, you can plug your tool into ChatGPT, or for example, say when we released first lines, it was just ChatGPT writing lines based off of scraped data. So we would scrape the website of apple.com, then we would use ChatGPT to scrape that, right? That was a tool that we added to response towards the end of of running it, and that costed credits with API. So that was expensive, right? The point is that if we had released that to 100,000 people on AppSumo and made, 200 grand in one day, and all those people that, all those kind of like AppSumo success stories, which are amazing, you do not want to do that long term because the cost to maintain a software in the sort of generative AI era, it ends up costing you more, not only in sort of like raw like cost of the credits, but also in the implication of customer support. So people don't think
Yeah.
about how it's costing our team money to work on those leads who have had like 1,000 credits a month for free for the next like, 10 years because they've paid like $50 and something like that,
Yeah.
It in essence, really, the better ways of doing it would be that you have a year of updates, for example, and 3 months of support, with the inherent vice of your software being that if they don't buy again, it's dramatically reducing their like, their like enjoyment of the product. So I know that was
Yeah.
wordy. In other words,
Oh.
you can offer a lifetime deal as long as they know that they get way more value if they just keep paying for it. So I'll give
Yeah.
you 100 credits a month for $60, and you know that no one is going to long term enjoy or benefit from 100 credits a month, but they're going to like the product enough to upgrade. So you have to have built a good enough product that is attractive to upgrade, but you've also got a lot of leeches in that sort of lifetime deal space. So you can end up self sort of cannibalizing because good, truly good, like customer support costs money. And if you're paying for APIs and you're paying for like ChatGPT and you're paying for like server costs and things like that, you end up kind of alienating those customers because you don't
Yeah.
want to spend 2 hours on a Zoom call, like going through how to do something with someone who's paid you like $39. You're like, nah, like this is.
And I know there's like some lifetime deals that were like absolute like steals. Like for example, Instantly was like an amazing one. Like I got it when they
Yeah.
released, and we're still using it. Like that was like the
Exactly.
best lifetime deal I've had. But I do understand like the thinking that AI wise, the only way that I would see this making sense is if they were to use like their own like API key, for example,
Exactly,
so
man.
they
You hit
don't
the
use
nail.
like all your data.
Yeah,
But
exactly.
yeah, you still have to be a little bit cautious about these LT like these lifetime deals. So I think really providing like a bit of value so they can really benefit from their product, but just making it that they want to like upgrade later on is probably
Exactly,
like the
man.
best way to go about it. And one thing I guess I would love to hear, because you've obviously exited Response, that was like earlier this year, if I'm not mistaken. What would you say was really that moment, like, okay, like it's time to like move on to like the next venture. We're going to sell Response and just move on and build from there.
I would say there's definitely an aspect of the fact that when we go back to the novel concept thing and the sort of bandwagon thing, I think there like I'll be the first to admit there were people entering the space that were maybe doing the AI outreach on a better level. So I mean the likes of Clay and things like that. So we didn't have like the connections and the kind of like the kind of fingers in pies to get like cheap access to like APIs and stuff. So in other words, Clay will offer you thousands of credits with loads of different tools, and it'll all like waterfall enrich inside your database and that kind of thing. We didn't have those kind of opportunities. I didn't like have the know-how to build those. I didn't really have like the backbone to like reach out to people and ask for discounts and stuff. We were still operating on quite sort of slim margins. So I was like, right, well, I know that we're going to sort of get lapped eventually, but by these kinds of people, if our ideas keep getting flooded into the product. So I would say that at the time it was starting to admit that our specific, kind of like echo chamber of customers, they were enthusiastic. There was a wow factor to the product and we were riding that wave. The catch 22 of this being that the customer became quite difficult to pander to because they were so like sharp and on it and they were constantly looking for new tools. Our tool became like a sort of like it becomes like an important thing that they're using for their outreach. But unless you were sort of very directly involved in that process, it became quite difficult to for people to remain in the product. So in other words, there was some churn and that kind of thing. Couldn't get sort of like we couldn't solve the churn problem that much, but we knew that there were people who were smarter than us who would solve that problem by adding new tools to the product. They would have more sort of know-how in the industry. I was still in this sort of echo chamber, that small sort of Twitter space, and I knew that people had far-reaching kind of connections, and they would probably take the product somewhere else that was going to be, I suppose, ultimately what I wanted for the product is someone would take it and put it in like the household, like agencies, and somehow sort of get in there. I was
Yeah.
still targeting a lot of like the solopreneurs, like one man band agencies who would love the product. Then as soon as they stopped sort of running outreach, because you don't have to run outreach all the time if you just want to stay small
Yeah.
or you end up getting a lot of referrals, that kind of thing. You're not always running outreach. Like I know with Comb, for example, I'm using primarily social outreach like LinkedIn and Twitter and stuff. I'm not running cold email. So I know that, for example, if I was a response AI user at the time, I would now probably churn from the product because I'm not going to constantly be cold email. You go through these
Yeah.
seasons of cold email. You don't want to build a software, a bit of like advice for people. You don't want to build a software that's like seasonal. You want to build something that's inherent to, like, I suppose, a consistent process. So the best tools that you could build, which have high competition, is things like Slack or Zoom, where they're going to be using it all the time. You've got like Linea is a great like product management app where it helps like developers create better, products. You've got Posthog that's like analytics for apps.
Yeah.
These things are things that you should build because they're like long term. Like Comb, for example, is not like a long term product because once you get the data, like,
Yeah.
I'll
Just
admit you
gonna
get
use
the data.
it.
And that's it.
Yeah.
There's plans for that to make it like longer term, but you've got to focus on like keeping people. So I knew it was time to sell when I realized that like we would have to do a lot of things to try and keep people for like years as opposed to like months and
Yeah.
months, trying to find ways of doing that. I thought someone could probably do this better than me because I wasn't like an expert on customer success and an expert on like, keeping clients for like 10 years, for example. So
I
yeah.
love that because I feel like a lot of people that start like a SaaS company, it's either that they really have like the ability to like go out to the moon, they sell it to like VCs or anything like that, or then you have like the same component where you've built it, you're not sure how to get to that next level, or you feel that there's somewhat like a downturn in like the markets, and then you somewhat sell it to have someone else that perhaps has that expertise, maybe has different connections and is able to like get it to that next level. And I mean, for
Exactly.
you, I mean, it propels you to start like your new SaaS, which is obviously Calm. And just before we like wrap things up, would love to get like a high level, like what is Calm? Where do you see it going into like the future? Because we're of course looking at Apollo, we have Liskit, we have ZoomInfo. There is so many tools, but you've made it like really targeted, specific towards obviously like tech oriented.
In general, you've got like the problem with the sort of larger scale databases. If you are not good at sort of marketing to a lot of people, it's going to be harder to sell a mass product. So what I did was I went hyper specific. I thought I'm only going to target people who were sort of like needing kind of like crunch-based style of data, like tech and SaaS and startups, that kind of thing. But on top of that, you're extracting more value because if you pay for something like Crunchbase, you typically only have like the domains, you don't have all of like the
Yeah.
decision makers. So in essence, really, unless you're really good at marketing, like you've got like the likes of Listkit, Apollo, they did like less specificity because you've got so many leads on Listkit, for example. They're like legends in the space. They've gained a lot of trust. If you're starting from scratch, it's probably better as no audience, no leads. You have like no kind of like experience in SaaS. It is sometimes better to please maybe 1,000 people that you can think
Yeah.
of or that you could reach out to as opposed to going really high scale. Because it'll give you a better understanding of like of how to deal with the small amount of clients. So the best part is right now, Comb, with the amount of customers it has, I get to have really meaningful relationships with the customers, as opposed to when we got to responses level of like, I think we had around 500 users on board at sort of any given time. That was like I was trying to appease a lot of people and it was quite difficult. So when you sort of got your training boots on in SaaS, it's good to like have 10 people who are wild about the product. And I'm reaching out to people right now who are wild about a specific subset of like data. And
Yeah.
when we go to solve the e-commerce problem, so obviously lots of people like Stories, they like Brand Nav, things like that. I've seen a few sort of like people need a specific solution for e-commerce. And if I say, look, for X amount of money, you guys get 500,000 verified decision makers who run software, who run e-commerce brands, that's kind of like the next magnum opus, like what could provide a lot of value. Because people are having to do these kind of like convoluted, like waterfall ways of getting the e-commerce leads. Like you get built with, then you get you have to go through Apollo, then you get the. If I just said, look, 250,000 or 500,000 or 100,000, whatever it is, decision makers who own brands, that is just it. And it means that
Poor
I'm
feeling.
pandering to a very specific subsector. And it's only people, you could say, people who have less experience, they would say, but you're going to lose loads of customers. So I'm not losing any customers. I'm only gaining customers who are going to love the product, as opposed to if you're not very good at marketing like me, you need to just brand it to a small subsector. Because someone like Mistkit or Apollo, they have such an ingrained sense of like who needs what that they can market to a lot of people. But if you're just starting out and you're not as experienced as those guys and not as ingrained in the sort of community and have less sort of goodwill, you've got to try and do something really good for a couple of people, if that makes sense. And typically that person's you, by the way. If you think like, oh, what ideas, what can I build? Just build something that's going to like solve your problem. So the e-commerce data is going to solve my actual problem, which is that a few of the side projects and stuff I'm trying to reach out to brands. When you scrape these databases, it's really hard to find good leads. So that's the problem we're going to solve. And that's kind of how that works for sure. It's just being specific.
And I love what you mentioned that like a lot of beginners might think like, oh, you're gonna run out of leads because you're going in like a very specific target. But in a way, as you mentioned, you're focusing more on having like an higher LTV, making sure that you're delivering like a really great service to those people, and they do stay on for like quite a while, as opposed to trying to like appeal to everyone, having so much customer service, they end up like burning out wanting to sell the company. So I think somewhat being like a bit more specific can be like valuable in a way as well. And I'm assuming when you approach like having a much more specific TAM demographic, I'm assuming the like outbound outreach, like reaching out to these people, connecting with them, there is probably a bit more of a like a personalization approach, like thoughtful approach, as opposed to trying to like appeal to everyone, right?
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah. So an example is that if you've got a guy with a bio on Twitter that says helping SaaS companies reduce their churn, I just know that if you message them and say, "Hi, Steve, I noticed that you're running, zerochurn.com, your agency to help SaaS companies. I've got a database of tech decision makers that you could reach out to. Do you want this for, whatever the early bird is, like $60, whatever it is?" I just know that if someone wrote that to me when I really needed leads in that space, I just know that I would buy it. Like, it doesn't make any sense not to for me. I know that sounds biased because it's my offer, but it's not going to appeal to everyone. And that's the whole point. Like, it's only going to be irresistible to the people that I kind of care about. In essence, really, then the e-commerce data is going to be another one. Like, if you are reaching out to e-commerce brands, I just know that you're going to buy the thing because it's going to solve that problem immediately. So you should always bias towards the aha moment, like as soon as possible. So that's why these client that so that's why these companies grow so fast, is because the speed to the aha moment, like, oh, this is cool, it's very quick. So you ask ChatGPT how to build, how to write you a quiz for your 9 to 5, whatever it may be, because you have a Christmas party coming up. You've got the quiz immediately, and that's your aha moment. Like, oh, it did exactly what I wanted it to do. If you bias towards and optimize for the aha moment quicker, you typically get the aha moment if your result is like specific to that person. So that's kind of how that works, is getting people on board who are going to immediately like it. And it's easier to find those people technically because there's less of them, but you know exactly who it is when you see them. So when I see someone saying, "Oh, doing email marketing for SaaS companies," I know that I can reach out to that person. Whereas if it says something like running an agency, like that kind of thing is like harder, because I'm like, do I message this guy? There's a chance he'll like it. There's a chance he won't. So when you're solo and starting out, it's about knowing who you're reaching out to and not having to waste a message. Like, if you're DMing someone, it takes a minute to like sort of do it
Of
all.
course.
You don't want to have to, you want to optimize your time as much as possible. So having a clear target demographic, which is like people, in this case, people who are reaching out to SaaS companies, I know that that person is going to be interested in my thing, even if they're like not interested enough to buy it. They're still going to be like, oh, what is this? So that's kind of how it works for sure, man.
So essentially being like really hyper specific as far as the targeting, And by being hyper specific on the targeting, you can have a hyper specific approach. That's like a no-brainer for them to say, like, hey, why would I not want this, basically? And that's like the effect you try to create. That makes sense. Cool. No, really appreciate your time, Ollie. Thank you for coming on the show. And if there's like anyone that would want to reach out to you that could be interested in Comp or any of the future endeavors that you're like working on, what's like the best way to have to reach you?
Yeah, for sure, man. So I would say that I've got to get back into YouTube because I've got like, you know, a whopping 300 subscribers, or whatever, on there.
There
And
you go.
I think people did like the videos, like the tutorials and stuff, but I just stopped doing them when we exited the company. I would say that I'm going to start on there again. That's my promise to you as well, personally, on this call. So I will get back to YouTube. But I
Better.
would say Twitter, like the only pat on the back I give myself is that I always answer DMs, as long as they're not like spam and like just like idiots. So if you send a question, I will always answer it because I check like the requests and stuff. So email me, oliver@tricomb.com. I'll always answer DMs on Twitter. If it gets complex enough, I typically even get on like calls and stuff because I'm not like, you know, like I'm not that busy. So just let me know any questions you have about like SaaS or starting your own SaaS. Like, I'm happy to get on a call and have a chat with you about it, help you sort of like code the first couple of pages, that kind of thing. Always happy, because it makes me really happy to see like people building their own stuff, because SaaS has such a massive exit potential and you can get customers and enjoy like building stuff. I really encourage it. So always message anyone who's watching this. If you want to know about SaaS, just message and we'll have a chat for sure.
There you go. Ollie might be launching a mentorship program to help people build their own
It's
SaaS.
$997 only, massive course, you know, no
There
refunds. No, yeah, for sure, man.
you
No,
go.
it's exciting. I'm excited to sort of help people out, for sure. It's gonna be a good couple of like years in the space, because it's gonna be so easy to build stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Perfect. Well, appreciate it, Ollie.